Welcome to the Econ Dev Show. We explore the strategies, ideas, and insights that are driving economic development forward into the future. You'll hear new insights from passionate EDs about their successes and struggles. And you'll learn from attraction and retention experts about how to apply actionable strategies inside your EDO. We'll help take your organization, your community, and your career to the next level. Here's your host, Dane Carlson.
Welcome back to the Econ Dev Show. Today we're here with Ben Lamb. Ben is the Vice President of Economic Development for One Berkshires in Massachusetts. Ben, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Dane. Thanks
Absolutely.
For having me.
So One Berkshires is an economic development organization, but it's also a tourism organization, as I understand it.
Yeah, so we're kind of a unicorn when it comes down to the work we do. So we're actually a merger that occurred about a decade ago now. So we are the Regional Economic Development Organization for Berkshire County, as well as the Regional Marketing and Tourism Organization. And we're a membership-based organization with about 700 member businesses. So kind of like that regional chamber type model. All three of those live under one umbrella, which is One Berkshire.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's a regional chamber. You know, what is economic development and tourism? What are they like in Massachusetts?
So it depends on the day, it depends on the season, and it depends on what part of the state you're in. So here in the Berkshires, we have a really strong tourism economy. It's one of our major economic clusters. So we sort of have six primary economic clusters that drive most of the regional revenue through our economy. And tourism and hospitality is one of the biggest ones. On any given year, especially in the last few years, you know, you're talking $800, $900 million of earned revenue through hospitality and tourism just within the 32 cities and towns of Berkshire County. So it's one of our major industries. And as a state, it's certainly a large industry, but it's probably not as big in other regions as it happens to be here in Berkshire.
Sure. So when I saw that, I think One Berkshires was advertising in New York City somewhere, that was for tourism? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a really exciting first for us. So we were able to do a campaign right there. I think it was in Grand Central Station. And it kind of put the Berkshires in front of thousands of people that were just walking through that facility every day, which we haven't historically had the opportunity, because normally those types of programs are extremely expensive and cost prohibitive, especially when, there's not a huge amount of money that's allocated for hospitality and tourism marketing. And so we use our dollars very strategically. But it was exciting to be able to get in there and, you know, help a whole bunch of new people discover what it might be like to come out here to our region.
Yeah. And so tell me about the region. So, and tell our listeners about it so that if they don't know.
Yeah. So the Berkshires is actually a fairly well-known brand, especially in the international market. We tend to have a lot of travelers that come from outside the continental U.S. But we are 32 cities and towns. We are geographically about 1/6 of the entire state of Massachusetts. So go as far west as you think you need to go from Boston and then keep going a little bit more. And there we are. We joke around and say, like, here be dragons. Like, this is the land of who knows what when it comes to Massachusetts. Right. So we're, you know, the really one of the interesting things about us is that we touch three states. So we're the only part of Massachusetts that touches three states. We're formerly in many ways a mill town economy. So we were driven by, you know, the industrial era. And over time, you know, we saw what that turned into on a national scale. We saw a lot of mill towns see a decline. And the Berkshires had an interesting spin where they really adopted a cultural economy approach to trying to fill those gaps that they were seeing as a lot of those industries were starting to wind down. And so we have a very robust cultural economy here, which pairs well with our hospitality and tourism. But then we also have a strong innovation economy. You know, we have the Berkshire Innovation Center, which just opened up a couple of years ago here, and doing some really exciting work around, you know, kind of growing various industry sets, whether that's in clean tech or AI or aerospace. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in our, you know, very rural corner of the world.
But you're the economic development, or you're the vice president of economic development. So what is your, you know, what's your day-to-day look like?
No two days are the same. I think that most of the people you talk to probably say the same thing. My background is actually not in economic development, which is kind of interesting. So when I walk into rooms and people think that I have a degree in economics or whatever the case might be, I actually, my background is in biology and environmental studies. And then I got my master's degree in higher education. And I worked in higher ed for 8 years before I made the big leap and went to economic development. Now, on my side, volunteer work, engagement, very much so about creative placemaking and what that means for small rural economies. So that was always kind of a passion. But when I came to One Berkshire, we actually didn't have a truly fully fledged economic development department. So I was able to sort of build that from scratch over the last 6 years and make it so that it was as relevant and high impact as possible for the rural region we have. So because we have all these kind of like interesting corners and nooks and crannies and kind of multi-regions within one region kind of mentality in some ways, you have to sort of be able to cover that spectrum. And so we started coining this idea of wraparound economic. So it's not just buildings and jobs and, you know, bringing in new businesses, but it's also what are all those peripheral services, cross-cutting issues, opportunities to accelerate things as they come down the pike, whether those are resources to the state or federal government. And how do we make sure that we're addressing all of those in some way, shape, or form all the time? So we sit at a lot of different tables. We, you know, we facilitate a lot of coalitions. We say that we are a connective tissue organization in that we are out there trying to bring together partners and stakeholders that might not know what the other one's doing. And so we bring them together into a common space so they can tackle it together. We don't aim to do all the work, right? 32 cities and towns is a lot of space to cover. But what we do aim to do is really aggregate people around common issues and conflict. So my day-to-day, if it's not doing direct consults, we do about 250 direct consults with businesses every year on our team. If it's not doing that, it's a lot of those cross-cutting issues and bigger picture, sort of trying to address the larger.
Sure. So what, you know, recently, what's one of those common issues that you've brought people together on?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone in the country would say that housing isn't an issue right now.
An issue everywhere.
So we've actually taken, And, you know, it's not necessarily something that other economic development organizations in the Commonwealth are addressing. But it is something that we've dug into because, you know, about 5 years ago, actually almost exactly 5 years ago, we launched our regional economic development imperative, the Berkshire Blueprint 2.0. And in that, it kind of addresses kind of those bigger cross-cutting issues. And we sort of set ourselves onto a stage where we're the stewards of the document. And we're, so we're helping to make sure that things are happening and we're tracking things and benchmarking. And one of the big things that was even going on then in the Berkshires is we were seeing a housing crunch. And it's an interesting issue because a lot of people think that it's, you need more affordable housing. But quite frankly, here in Berkshire County, we actually need more market rate housing to relieve the downward pressure that's happening on our affordable housing. So people aren't able to get into affordable housing because it's not accessible because people that can afford to live in market rate can't move up. So we really found kind of this niche where we're helping to coordinate and bring together partners. You know, we have our Berkshire Regional Planning Commission and Berkshire Housing and bringing together those kind of that triad to really build efforts around advocacy and helping with policy changes and, you know, helping to strategize some actual projects. So we launched a document back in 22 that was the housing vision for the Berkshire. And that laid out kind of all the things that can happen. And so we've really gotten into the weeds with something like that. We've done similar stuff with things around transportation. So, you know, Transportation Management Association facilitation and figuring out that's viable. Right now, we are also deeply in the weeds with tech entrepreneurship in a rural economy. It's something where there's a lot of potential to scale. So we've been working with the Berkshire Innovation Center, Osher Lifelong Learning at Berkshire Community College, and then also our friends at the Center on Rural Innovation up in Vermont, really think through what does a tech and digitally enabled ecosystem look like in the rural Berkshire. And so for about 3 years now, we've been really digging in and tackling a lot of the bits and pieces to make that happen. And so it's exciting work. And again, no day is the same, but it's relentlessly entertaining is the phrase.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. But it does sound like you have your fingers in, you know, so many different pies. I guess the question is, you know, you obviously didn't plan to be an economic developer. So what's the story? How did you end up in this field? If, you know, you came from this, biology, environmental studies, education sort of background.
Yeah. I've always sort of been someone that never believed in a straight path from your start point to your career point and beyond. And so, you know, I've sort of taken opportunities as they've availed themselves to me. And so that, you know, going to college, I was the kid that was like, I'm going to get a reliable job in the sciences. I'm going to go biology. Just added environmental studies and chemistry for giggles while I was doing it so that I had a really, you know, robust science degree. Went out in the world, tried some stuff, you know, lived in Alaska and Belize and Virginia for a tick and sort of just trying to figure out what I liked and what I didn't. And found out that I really enjoyed people power, you know, working with people more, and specifically the college and high school population. So became a high school guidance counselor for a tick, where I was helping students that were generally underrepresented get into college or figure out their next step post-graduation, which led to my going for my master's degree in higher ed, and landed me at Williams College, where I was there again for 8 years working in student affairs. And it was during that 8 years that I really started to set down roots in the community that I was living in. And that included a lot of volunteer work, a lot of getting very involved in local organizations. I actually ended up being a city councilor. So I ran for city council. I served for 4 terms as a city councilor in North Adams. In that involvement, in that understanding of larger systems, I really gained an appreciation for what it means to make a direct impact, not just on individual lives, but on larger systems, like an economy. And so between that and my love for creative placemaking, I did a lot of fundraising and crowdsourcing efforts to help do some creative infrastructure development throughout the city. Those, you know, kind of started to pair together, and, you know, threw in the fact that me and my wife decided that it made sense to open a business during all this. So we owned a cafe for a couple of years. We were sort of in the mode of, you know, put our money where our mouth was. And if we wanted a cafe in downtown and no one else was going to do it, we're going to do it. So for a couple of years there, we basically earned a business degree by running a business while also working our full-time job. And then we had a child, and that threw everything out the window. So the business, you know, transitioned, but our involvement didn't. We continued to stay really deeply ingrained in the community. And then as I was in higher ed and I was sort of looking for the next step, I sort of was hitting walls in terms of, you know, when you work in a particular department in higher education, you often sort of get pigeonholed, only being seen as someone that can do that specific type of work. And I appreciate being able to sort of be a jack of all trades in that I can be involved in a lot of different things and I can see where those things connect. And so it was hard for me to just stick myself into another slot in an educational sense. And so I had heard a little bit about One Berkshire at the time. I wasn't super in depth on it, and actually applied for a different job with the organization that was more on the member services side, but it wasn't the right fit. And I think it was appropriate for both of us to recognize that. But this opportunity was sort of percolating because they realized that they needed to do more around their economic development program. And I guess I would say the rest is history at that point. I dug in. You know, built my team of two that we had for about 5 years, turned into a team of 3 fairly recently, and then we just got a fellow, so now we have a team of 4. So we're cranking, and there's more than enough work for all of us to be doing. So it just proves that we've sort of grown and scaled with the needs of the community around us. So that's sort of how I landed here. And again, who knows what this role is going to look like going forward? Because we take our signaling from the business community and the community that we serve. So it's always interesting.
Yeah. Being a member, membership supportive organization. Yeah. That things can change a little bit from time to time. So that's really interesting. So do you interact with the other economic developers from across the state and the state organization quite a bit, or how does that part work?
Yeah. So we have a really great working relationship with the Executive Office of Economic Development. They changed titles a year ago, so I have to remind myself, but EOED. And so fortunately, actually, the secretary, Yvonne Howe, is a graduate of a college from the Berkshires. She has a home here in the Berkshires. So we've got, you know, a really good working relationship with her and her department. And we actually work very closely with the Massachusetts Office of Business Development. We're sort of their on the ground office extension. So, you know, they're a quasi-governmental branch and we are a branch of a quasi-governmental, which means that we, you know, we get a little bit of grant funding from them each year to help with operations. And so that network of other organizations were the REDUs, or Regional Economic Development Organizations. I believe there's 12 of us. And it's a legislatively established cluster of organizations that covers the whole state. And we're kind of a cohort, right? So we work together. Brainstorm on issues collectively. We do some collective advocacy work. And we, you know, we all have our own little niche of what we're focusing on, depending on our particular region's needs. But there's some shared learning and there's certainly opportunities to collaborate in certain ways. And so that's really become kind of our cohort of partners, you know, statewide. But we work with a lot of folks from outside the state too. So we've built really powerful relationships through the Center on Rural Innovation. We're part of the Rural Innovation Network. You know, I just tapping into my network in higher ed, you'd be surprised how many people in higher ed end up working in some sort of economic development, whether at a municipal level or at a regional level. So that's kind of been fun to navigate over time. But I personally have always been a strong believer of make a friend before you need a friend. And so I have a lot of friends out there in the world, and a lot of those relationships have actually turned into fruitful endeavors in one way, shape, or form professionally.
That's a good one. I like that. I'm going to write that down. Make a friend before you need a friend.
There's a lot of Benism.
Oh, I can imagine. Seems like it. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're in a rural area, but you're not in a part of the country that we typically associate with rural. You know, you're mm-hmm. on the eastern seaboard and in the Northeast. It's just not generally. I mean, obviously there is a lot of rural area there, but you're so close to such large populations. Do you think that, how does that impact, you know, how does that make your day-to-day different than say somebody in, you know, the middle of Nebraska or something that might be dealing with many of the same issues that you're dealing with, but doesn't have that huge population nearby to draw from?
Yeah. And it's a really interesting challenge and opportunity depending on the day. You know, I think it's always a matter of working with or working against perceptions. So, you know, when we look at the Berkshires, if you were to look at a map of the Berkshire, map of Massachusetts and all of New England, you'll see the Green Mountains run down through Vermont. And then they basically keep going. And those are the Berkshire Hills. And so when we think about sort of our geographic region, we joke around sometimes that we're more like southern Vermont, both politically and geographically. And when people think Vermont, they think rural. Right? It's, you know, hills and maple syrup and covered bridges and all those things that are very New England, right? And that really is what the Berkshires is like. And so, like, when we think about that bucolic piece, when I talk to, so I'm actually, it's funny you said Nebraska. So I'm currently, like, well, in April, I'll be defending my dissertation at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, which is focused on how do we retain our college graduates in rural economies. And with my focus being in Western Mass, I really had to make a case as to why I'm focusing on this area, because no one thinks of Massachusetts.
Right.
Everyone thinks Boston, right? It's just like everyone thinks New York City when they think New York. They don't necessarily think about the Adirondacks. And so in many cases, it's trying to sell the story that who we really are and that there are huge opportunities here and there's scalability that can happen because that we've sort of been left behind in many ways as a region in one way, shape, or form. Because people think that it's, again, they think it's cows and no broadband. That's
right.
What they sort of think when they, you know, imagine this area. And Tanglewood, which is our, you know, one of our longest running musical institutions here. And this was where, you know, the rich went to their cottages, or which are mansions, back in the day. And so it's got some really conflicting identities, while also being a space where you've got these mill towns with the mill town infrastructure that, you know, sort of went defunct when those industries shut their doors. So it's all of these different identities sort of mixed in a bag. And I think when we're trying to tell the local population really what the economy is like right now, it's mostly education, right? It's really helping them understand what's actually happening versus what they might see on Facebook, or they might hear someone else tell them, oh, there's nothing here for XYZ. Well, I can easily show them, well, actually, here's all the XYZ you could ever want and more. And then when it comes to the state level, you know, it's a matter of advocating for the things that we actually need versus the things that they might think that we need. Again, going back to the point on housing, they might think that we just need, and I use that phrase very intentionally, that we just need more affordable housing.
Right.
You know, but we have to be banging on the drum of market rate housing. And how do you build incentive packages for rural economies versus just, and so like that tends to be kind of the piece. We're telling one story locally to educate the local population, and then we're really singing another song to our friends at the state and federal level so that they really see what the opportunity is here. And the crazy thing is when, if you draw a 2-hour drive radius around Boston and you drive a 2-hour drive radius about where I'm sitting right now, there's about 12 million people in the radius when you're out in Boston. There's about 24 million people in the radius.
Oh my.
In Berkshire County. So our drive market is actually double what it is if you were in Boston, which means that we have a lot more opportunity, but it just hasn't necessarily been realized. And I think that we've tried to start to coalesce around this idea that we are at the intersection of the innovation corridor that runs from Boston to Buffalo and the creative corridor that runs from New York to Canada. And we're literally where those two things meet. And so how do we, you know, sort of foster this identity around those things and help that actually bolster the future of our economy? So that's been a lot of our, when I talked about the tech and digital enabled economy work, like it's a lot of how do we celebrate that and really turn it into a brand. And so that's, you know, one of the nice things about being, you know, next door to my neighbors here who are on the marketing team, being able to have conversations around building a brand identity without having to go outsource it to some consultant that's going to charge us up to wazoo. We can have a lot of really creative synergy moments within One Berkshire's structure.
That's fabulous. And that makes perfect sense, given the place you are and given the opportunities that you have. Is there ever a, I mean, you know, I know you touched on this, that there's a, you tell one story to the residents and one story to the outside world. Is there ever tension when those stories get crossed, when, you know, when the locals, when the residents begin to recognize that you're, you know, you're saying what, is there any tension, I guess, between the locals and the non-locals?
Yeah, and I'll rephrase that a little bit. I don't think that we're telling a different story. I think we're telling a story to make them meet in the middle. Right. So we're telling a story to the local population that doesn't think that we need certain things or that doesn't think we have certain things, that we do have those things. And we're telling the story to the state that thinks that we have all those things that we need, that we actually do need more. Right. So it's trying to get the local population, especially our youth, right? We'll just use that as kind of a category demo, right? We want our youth, we want our more diverse populations to be here and to stay here, or to come here and to stay here. And so how do we, you know, kind of tell that story of all the opportunities that are at their fingertips and help to embrace them? And then on the other end, it's telling the story to legislators, to policymakers, to the governor, that, you know, here are the resources we need in order to meet where you actually think we're at. And so kind of helping those two things meet in the middle so that we get the resources we need and we have the population we need. Because we've had, you know, in Berkshire County, we've had a workforce crisis for the better part of 7 years. We have at any given moment right now, we have around 1800 unfilled positions in the county, and we really only have about 1700 people not working currently. So even if all 1700 of those people just entered those jobs, we would still have a 100 jobs sitting on the bench waiting to be filled. And so that, you know, that creating an influx for the future and also a retention model for our youth is one of our major priorities as an organization.
Gotcha. And what are the demographics like in the Berkshires? You know, are you having children? Is the population getting older? Like what, how's that all playing out?
Well, I've done my job.
Replacement.
We're working on it from our end. It's going to be interesting sort of how the metrics start to play out. I think in the next census, it's going to be really telling because we saw a huge influx of folks from major metropolitan areas during the pandemic. You know, they were looking for affordability. They were looking for a place that had space. They wanted a backyard. They wanted something where they, you know, didn't have to be around people if they didn't want to, but they had cultural amenities nearby. So we saw a lot of people that either had second homes from those metro areas that actually moved more permanently up here, or folks that just came from all over East Wobegon and joined our community. The stickiness factor will be interesting to see how many of those people actually persist long term. But since all of that happened in 2020 and 2021, it didn't get captured in the 2020 census. So our numbers were very sort of deflated from what we actually think that they were. But in terms of our population demos, you know, we are an older population. We certainly lean on the more aged, you know, population density. And that's, you know, I think a facet both of sort of how industry has played out here, but then also like, you know, what people were looking for at given points and when people bought homes here and they just stayed in them and now they're just here forever kind of thing. And people have been here for generations and generations. You see a lot of like folks that were, you know, for five generations, my community has lived in, or my family has lived in this community. And that kind of one of the newer trends that we're seeing, we saw it really highlighted first in kind of our tourism research, was we're seeing the population getting younger. So, right. And it's not happening. Like we're not going from like 60 down to 30 as the median age or anything right away, but we are seeing it go from like 47 and a half to like 44 and a half. Right. And that's over like a 7 year period. So there are some of those, and that's in the tourism side, I should reemphasize that. But, you know, as a region, we are seeing it get younger, which is exciting, especially for folks like myself that want to have peers and, you know, other folks with kids. So my kids have friends, things like that. And we're also seeing it get more diverse. You know, we, you know, if you go back the 2010 census, I think we were tracking around 11% non-white, which we're an extremely white region. That's just, you know, a fact of the Berkshires. Now, I think we're closer to 13 or 14%, and it's continuing to track that way, which means that folks are moving here from outside the area. They're bringing themselves and their family and their backgrounds and everything. And we need it. Our fastest growing population is our immigrant population. And it has been now since at least 2010, if not longer. And it's double digit percentages, you know, over that 10 year period between the census. So it's exciting. The place is kind of bubbling up with energy, and we're seeing a lot of new businesses opening that those folks are starting or bringing with them, which is also, you know, something that I love to see, especially on the day to day.
Oh, that's fabulous. That's good. That is, you know, you always worry about rural areas that they're just going to gray out and become homogenized in their, you know, population. And it's good when you start to see these changes. And I think we're going to see a number of situations like that across the country where they grew during the pandemic and it wasn't reflected in the census, and hopefully some of it sticks around, and that's going to be good. But yeah, no, those kind of issues, those demographic issues are, you know, we're facing them everywhere. So,
So
that's right. That's right. We have probably the rest of the decade is going to be a little rough, I think, as you know, as they all, as the boomers all leave the workforce, and the Gen X's kids aren't yet old enough.
And it was accelerated,
you know, to take their place yet. But so it's going to be, yeah. You look like a Gen Xer, like myself, and you know, it's a or late mill or late early mill.
I'm a Xennial.
Yeah,
what, right. Yeah, I'm
like, I'm right in the middle there.
Like,
huh?
I'm at 85, yes. Right? Like I remember all the cool stuff, but you know, also understand.
Yes, right, yeah. Exactly. And you know, there's not quite enough of us to take all the places of all the boomers. So, yeah.
And we're not in our prime earning ages yet, right? So that also leads
Correct.
To different things with
Correct.
Your, you know, tax,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So there's,
yeah. Yeah. We've never really functioned in that environment where those demographic changes were taking place.
Yeah.
It's
always been a backfill. That
always,
was adequate. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting. You mentioned in your, the interview that I had you fill out before that Goodnight Moon was your favorite book. And so, You did write that,
yeah.
And I have to ask you, because I just recently heard this, and I don't know, because I haven't, you know, my kids are a little bit older probably than yours, but I don't remember Goodnight Moon too well. But I heard that is it about death? I'm supposed to ask that question. Do you think that the book Goodnight Moon is about death?
Huh. Okay, so you're making, like, my academic hat is coming on right now, and I think you may be selling a story that could be true. I mean, it's just like Ring Around the Rosie
was all
about, like, the plague, right? And most of our fairy tales were written by the Brothers Grimm, and we know how that went. So I, you know, it very well could be. I think the reason that I like it so much, the reason I liked it when I filled out the survey anyway, is it's one of those ones where I don't even necessarily like to look at the pages, and I can still read it to my kid. And it's just like, you know, there's that evening rhythm that occurs. But yeah, that's an interesting point. I could definitely see it being about death. And now I feel a little bit guilty for constantly reading that to my children.
Well, you know,
what am I ingraining into their mind?
You could be giving them nursery rhymes. So, I mean, it's the same, right?
Well, we picked up an alternative version of it called Goodnight Pothole, which is all about the potholes in New Orleans recently. So we all.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm going to have to get that book. That sounds good. Goodnight Pothole.
It's a good one. Yeah. You know, when you care about municipal infrastructure, those are the types of things that you
should
pay attention to.
Right, exactly. Well, Ben, this has been fun. Is there anything that we,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for having
Is there anything else that you want to say that we missed or anything you want to emphasize?
No, I don't think so. You know, I will say that, you know, back to making a friend before you need a friend, we're always interested in talking to other folks that are doing cool stuff around the country. And so never hesitate to reach out. We're easy to find, and we'd love to connect with friends from coast to coast and everywhere.
Excellent. Well, I hope that our listeners do that for you. So good to talk to you. Good to meet you.
Beautiful. You as well. Take care. And hopefully you're getting better weather than we are right now.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Have a good one. See ya.
You've been listening to the Econ Dev Show with Dane Carlson. If you're an economic developer who never stops learning, for more expert strategies, fresh insights, and new ideas to take your career, organization, and your community to the next level, visit us on the web at econdevshow.com.